WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, beautiful people? Hope you had a great weekend. I'm excited about today, just simply because each and every Monday, man oh man, so much goes on over the weekend in Current Sports. Hey, we tackle it all, okay? Oh, boy, the Lions. How about the Lions falling to the Carolina Panthers, their first loss of the season? The Tigers looking good right now, getting some clutch wins, a three-game sweep over Cleveland. A lot of Spartans in the NFL making noise also on Sunday yesterday. Oh, boy, so much to talk about, so little time. Strap in, folks, because you do not want to miss today's Current Sports. But, hey, it's custom here on the show. Here's the man, the myth, the legend, Alex Sharg, with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon and happy Monday. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, September 15th. The Detroit Lions fell to the Carolina Panthers 24-7 on Sunday. In his first start since fracturing his ribs in a preseason game, Cam Newton threw for 281 yards and a touchdown and ran for 19 yards on four carries. He helped the Panthers improve to 2-0 for the first time since 2008 and now grabbed sole possession of first place in the NFC South. Matthew Stafford finished the game for the Lions for 27 of 48 for 291 yards with one touchdown and one interception. Everyone in the NFC North is now 1-1. In baseball news, the Detroit Tigers got back on track over the weekend.
Driven to the air to left. Ball hit well. Brantley going back. Looks up. It's gone. Ian Kinsler, a two-run shot, and the Tigers have taken the lead again against Shaw.
Ian Kinsler's two-run home run off Brian Shaw in the seventh inning put the Tigers ahead yesterday as they went on to beat the Cleveland Indians 6-4 at Comerica Park, sweeping the three-game series. Tigers starter Justin Verlander allowed three runs on six hits and three walks over 5 2/3 innings. He finished with six strikeouts on the day. Tigers are now a game and a half ahead of the Kansas City Royals in the AL Central. USA Today Sports surveyed 28 higher-profile players during last week's NHL media tour in New York, and 13 players at approximately 46% of the vote said Mike Babcock of the Detroit Red Wings was NHL's best coach. Six players, which was 21% of the vote, went to Chicago Blackhawks coach Joel Quenneville. The balloting for top defenseman was scattered all over the map and was inconclusive. Nashville Predators' Shea Weber, Kings' Drew Doughty, Blackhawks' Duncan Keith, Ottawa Senators' Erik Karlsson, Bruins' Zdeno Chara, and Minnesota Wild's Ryan Suter were the top vote-getters, but no one had a significant lead. The Michigan football team had a great 34-10 win against Miami, Ohio on Saturday. The Wolverines held the Redhawks to 33 yards on 24 carries, 1 week after holding Notre Dame to 54 yards rushing. The defense pitched a shutout in the second half, however. The Wolverines allowed 10 points in the first half after turnovers allowed Miami to start its scoring drives 21 and 35 yards away from the end zone. Miami was held to 198 yards of total offense on the day. To Michigan State football, despite a week off, they moved up two spots to number 11 in both the Associated Press and the USA Today coaches polls on Sunday. The Spartans are now the highest-ranked one-loss team in the nation, with their only setback coming against number 2 Oregon. South Carolina's win over Georgia vaulted the Gamecocks 10 spots at number 14 in the AP poll, giving the Southeastern Conference an unprecedented 7 teams in the top 15. Wow. J. Rue Campbell, a Detroit Cass Tech football star who served time in jail for assaulting a school security officer, is back in police custody just hours after being released from jail. A source familiar with the incident said that Campbell was seen physically assaulting his girlfriend inside of the school near the end of the school day. A teacher and other students intervened, according to the source. Detroit Police Spokesman Sergeant Michael Woody said the 17-year-old was brought to the Detroit Detention Center, where he will be held on an assault charge. Detroit Public Schools Police is the arresting agency, according to him. To USA basketball, Kyrie Irving scored 26 points and was named the tournament MVP as Team USA defeated Serbia 129-92 to claim the gold medal in the Basketball World Cup yesterday. James Harden added 23 points for the Americans, who made 11 of 16 three-pointers in a sensational shooting first half. The Americans came in winning 32.5 points per game, and their closest victory in the tournament was by 21 points over Turkey. And lastly, Floyd Mayweather stays atop the boxing world, cruising to a unanimous decision over Marcos Maidana. The judges had it ruled 116 to 111, 116 to 111 again, and 115 to 112, all for Mayweather. He retains his welterweight and junior middleweight world titles Saturday night at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, September 15th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show with all of the NFL recaps over the weekend. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, my man, Alex Sharg, with the current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything, anything that we talk about, or that's just on your little sports heart, you can do so by calling in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about it, folks. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And exciting news, I got to bring this up, folks. Not only can you follow all of my all of the tweets that I tweet out, okay? You know I have a lot of opinions about sports. I'm always I live on Twitter, basically, right? You guys know that, those who follow me at Al Martin WKR. But we also now have a Twitter handle for the Current Sports Show. That's right. Current Sports has its own Twitter aside from my own. You can follow us. That's right. Whip out those cell phones, that iPad or tablet, whatever you got, or if you're on your laptop, and just simply follow WKAR_sports. Pretty simple, right? At WKAR_sports. You can follow everything live action as to what's going on with the show. If you happen not even to be listening to us, but you still want to weigh in or comment or anything like that, again, follow us. Follow Current Sports. It's the show right now. WKAR_sports, folks. So much to talk about, though. Man, I love Mondays just because we try to jam in as much as we can and try to debate about as much as we can on the show in the course of 1 hour. And so much took place over the weekend. From the Tigers, as you just heard, sweeping the Indians, showing that, hey, yeah, it's game time, baby. October's almost here. This is when you got to start playing your best ball. And man, oh man, they sent a message in many people's eyes with that sweep. Also, Floyd Money Mayweather. Boy, I tell you, I feel as though each and every time, you know, I won't say that I'm a Floyd Mayweather Jr. hater. You know what I mean? I respect Floyd. I think Floyd is the best pound for pound fighter in the game right now. Probably will go down. It's pretty much safe to say this, that Floyd will go down as the best defensive fighter in the history of boxing. Floyd is great. An unblemished record. I'm not too fond of the man's personality outside of the ring. I've made that known. You guys know that. So I'm always rooting against him, I guess you could say. So I guess you kind of just call me a Floyd hater in that regard to some degree. So yes, I was rooting against the man this past weekend. Yeah, I wanted to see Marcos Maidana, you know, hit him with a knockout and finally put a blemish on that record. But Mayweather, in typical Mayweather fashion, it goes 12 rounds and he wins by a decision. He's still racking in the dough, folks. Can you believe this? I don't know if you guys saw this stat, though. It was really mind-boggling and kind of puts things in perspective for us blue-collar folks here. But you know what? Floyd actually, this is a crazy stat here. Floyd actually took in a mind-blowing $888,000 per minute. Per minute. That's about $900,000 per minute during that fight. Can you believe that? That totally just blew my mind when I read that stat. But hey, Floyd gets the job done. He is the highest paid athlete in all of sports right now. Oh boy, what'd you think about the fight? I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. We'll be talking about that during our second segment of today's show. We'll also bring you our weekend winners and so much more, folks. Alex Sharg, how was your weekend, man? How you doing?
Hey, man, pretty good. I heard about your fantasy woes.
Oh, no. He would bring it up. I know. Yep, yep, yep. Well, I tell you what, folks, my college roommate, my brother from another mother, is actually witnessing the show in real time. He's behind the glass right now. He's in Lansing. He visited me throughout the weekend. You know, it's so crazy, man. You know, I hate fantasy football. Can I say that now? I'm almost hating fantasy football now as much as I hate recruiting, Alex. I hate it. I just hate them both with a passion now because I tell you what, there's no method to becoming great at fantasy football consistently And I would, if you got a great argument, I would love to argue with you about it.
Says you, but who's back-to-back champ or whatever.
I am, yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
So and
obviously,
there's some method you have.
I've lost 2 weeks, though, in a row. Like, on the last-minute whim against Johnny. Johnny Lewis, my college roommate. Again, he's up here. And we were actually going at it this week, you know, glued to my TV on Sunday, competing against each other. And I thought I had a comfortable lead. It was 144 to 103 going into the last game, last night's Bears and 49ers game. He has Colin Kaepernick and Brandon Marshall playing and catches up and beats me by 4 points. Almost threw my TV out the window, man.
You know, tough losses happen, but at the same time, it's a long season now.
I lost in all leagues, though. Yeah, even in the league with Charlie Bill and Mateen Cleese, I lost in that one. And in my other league, I lost in that one, too. I mean, it's just a terrible week for fantasy football, man. I'm very salty on this Monday. Very salty, man. But anyway, how was your weekend besides my fantasy woes?
Pretty good weekend. I enjoyed watching that Michigan game, actually, on Saturday.
Did you?
They had a lot of woes themselves. We'll get into that, I'm sure, a little bit in the show. But watched the entire game from start to finish. Watched the offense struggle.
The Michigan game?
The Michigan game.
Really? What made you sit in front of your TV and watch the Michigan game?
Well, it was Michigan State wasn't on, and it was 3:30 time. And aside from the Gamecocks game, that was really the only thing that I really was interested in watching. So.
Interesting.
Well, I didn't catch too much of Michigan so far, so I have a pretty good analysis of this team now that it's the second, third week.
I know, crazy. Time is flying, man. All right, well, we'll definitely get into that, folks. Again, phone lines are open right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's dive right into current sports by talking about the Lions. Yes, the Lions, they get their first loss of the year on the road against the Carolina Panthers yesterday. Oh, boy, Alex. I tell you what, watching that game, man, don't get me wrong here. I'm not about to bash the Lions. I'm not about to, you know, throw them down in the dumps right now. But there were a few things that really alarmed me throughout the game. First off, I just feel, looking at this loss to the Panthers, by the way, Cam Newton, who played, he had an outstanding game. Cam Newton, after missing week one, it seems as though the man has not missed a beat at all. He looks even better than you know, just, I know this is a small sample size, but he looks even better even before he got injured. But I tell you what, man, the Lions missed out on a golden opportunity here, Alex, because I felt as though this, you know, you're playing a team, a division-winning team like the Carolina Panthers, who has a pretty solid defense. You could kind of send a message here that the Lions are for real. Like that Detroit is on the map here when it comes to Super Bowl contention. A golden opportunity. And, you know, this is a road game against a team like the Panthers. And I just felt as though the Lions, if they had to pull this one out, I mean, they would have been on everybody's national radar for a possible Super Bowl here. But looking at the way in which they sort of just kind of trickled out and fizzled out throughout this game, first off, I got to bring up the turnovers. How about the turnovers, man? I mean, just turnovers that just should not be happening. There was one moment with Joik Bell, right? I don't know if you saw this, but Joik Bell, you know, who had a decent outing to you know, as the game kind of went on in the third and fourth quarters. But to start the game, I mean, the man fumbles. He has a dropped pass. I mean, we saw a few drop passes here and there. And, you know, and then not even into that. Look at Nate Freese, who has two field goal misses. And I'm sitting there like, come on, dude. Like, what is up? I mean, just mentally, for me, mentally, the Lions didn't seem like they were all there. And then a problem that's really been stemming since last season, and even really before that, the penalties. The penalties were another problem this past weekend, something that we harped on in week one. I mean, in every conceivable way possible that you could lose a game, the Lions did that. It seemed like the same old Lions to me on Sunday, Alex.
Yeah, so for what went wrong in this game, there are 3 points for me, and a lot of them are overstemming, overarching issues that tie into this latest draft. First off, Nate Freese, like you said, not only did he miss two field goals in that game, but now he's 2 of 5 already for the year.
Crazy.
In his rookie season.
Yeah.
And that's the same draft where the Lions could have drafted a cornerback that's much needed. They could have drafted even a linebacker.
And did you see, you know, the only corner that they drafted? Talk about irony. You know the only corner they drafted, right? Nevin Lawson, right?
Yeah, right.
He's out for the season now, possibly. Mm-hmm. Did you see that? He dislocated his ankle, I believe.
Still did pretty well when he was in, though.
Yeah, and he had to be carted off the field. And now, I mean, that secondary takes another hit. I mean, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the thing is they kept Freeze over, I think his name is Giorgio something, or some free agent kicker they were looking at, that they almost took over Nate Freeze, the guy they drafted. But looking back on it, they must have said, all right, well, we did waste a draft pick on him. He did outkick him in camp. We'll keep him. Well, now that's looking to backfire on him as this guy can't hit any field goal that he can make.
You know,
kicks.
Alex, we should have kept.
He's under 50%.
We should have kept Kickalicious. We should have kept. This guy is missalicious, okay? I mean, he can't make anything right now, but that was really alarming. But yeah. Overall, though, throughout this entire game, there were just little mistakes that the Lions made that were just amplified times 20 going against the Panthers, who, yeah. Again, who have a very solid defense, who have a very powerful offense. Again, you got to give credit where credit is due. The Panthers played great. The Lions, though, they kind of shot themselves in the foot on multiple instances throughout this game. I mean, 18 straight points for the Panthers. I mean, that's just really inexcusable for me. So if there's any positive to take away from this, I thought they had a great day. I thought the defensive line were played pretty well. 4 sacks, 2 by C.J. Mosley. And Ndamukong Suh had 2 tackles. Well, 3 tackles, excuse me. 2 for losses. Steven Tulloch, he had 10 tackles. I thought the defensive line, hey, they were there. You know, I thought, you know, if anything, the Lions just got beat down the field. Just, I mean, the Panthers really picked apart. Cam Newton really picked apart that secondary. Found guys down the middle. Found guys for big gains. And he also made things happen on the ground as well, which makes Cam Newton so dangerous, man.
Yeah, he made things happen. But honestly, Al, I kind of disagree. I mean, his passing rating wasn't that great.
Come on, for Cam Newton?
Yeah.
Anytime you got to have an over 100 pass rating, that's pretty admirable. It was 100.2, I think it was. Cam Newton balled out.
I don't know. There were
I thought Cam Newton
balled
out.
There were some receivers he went to downfield that he could not hook up with. And that might have been the Lions' defense. That could have been when Nevin Lawson was in shutting down guys before he got hurt. But
no. I
read some stat that he had the worst passer rating to one of his receivers. It was like second worst in the league.
To one of his receivers. I'm talking about overall, though. His overall body
was
work.
Was good.
Cam Newton was great, man.
He was
man.
Good, but against the Lions defense, you're admiring
exactly.
That much?
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying.
The Lions defense can't
that's
play
what I'm saying. You have to take it with a grain of salt because you're playing the Lions secondary, which arguably is the worst secondary in all of football. But analyzing what Cam Newton was able to do against that secondary, it was pretty admirable. I mean, he was able to do whatever he wanted throughout that entire game. I mean, if he wanted to make a 5-yard pass down the seam route, he made it. If he wanted to run the ball, he did that. Whatever Cam wanted to do, he was a kid in a candy store that entire day. I don't even think he had. Did he even have a turnover? I don't think he had a turnover either.
I don't think so, yeah.
So, compared to Matthew Stafford, who had a 76.2 passer rating, I mean, those are totally alarming numbers. But again, I agree with you. You already know how I feel about the Lions secondary.
Right. Now,
it's not saying
now
much,
some,
but
some
still.
Some of our interns have done some research here. One Tyler Beck here.
Yes,
in
Tyler Beck.
Today.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
He pulled up some stats for us that the Lions still outgained the Panthers in total offense throughout the day.
323 to 313. How about that? Isn't that alarming? That's an interesting stat.
As much as... Because I was going to come on the air today and give the Panthers defense so much credit and how without Hardy, and when I saw Greg Hardy wasn't in, Al, I was leaping for joy. I was like, there's no way the Lions are going to get shut down now.
And I'm going to get to him in a sec. Yeah, I'm going to get to him in a sec,
too.
But
the fact that they had their best player out and they still couldn't convert at all in the red zone. That, for me, the Lions' turnovers alone was what lost the game.
It comes down to efficiency, Alex. I mean, when you have... That when you have that much offense, 323 to 313, you outscore your opponent in total offense, and you don't produce points in those moments. I mean, it's alarming because the Lions just wasted opportunities when they were clearly right in front of their face. Again, Nate Freeze, you can't miss. You cannot miss field goals against a team like the Carolina Panthers. You cannot do that. Those little mistakes are amplified times 20. Times 20. So I just felt as though the Lions definitely had the opportunities. The opportunities were there. They just sort of squandered them. And another thing I have to bring up this, looking at the last interception that was thrown to Calvin Johnson from Matthew Stafford, and I've said this when it comes to Matthew Stafford. Oh, boy. For me, Matthew Stafford, again, he realizes that he has the best wide receiver in the game of football. There is no other receiver that can touch Megatron, point blank period. I mean, Calvin had some catches yesterday that will make anybody just say, what in the world? I mean, he's from Pluto. He is from Pluto. He makes plays. So I feel as though, and this was a problem last year as well, Matthew Stafford gets so comfortable sometimes with Calvin Johnson, the freak that he is, in making plays that the normal wide receiver can't make, that he feels as though he can just throw the ball up sometimes and that Calvin is going to bring it down. I understand the mentality there, but there have been multiple instances where, one, Stafford hasn't put it in a position for Calvin to make the play that has led to an interception, or two, he has forced it through a tight, tight window that is pretty much impossible for the ball to get to Calvin Johnson. Looking at that last interception, he totally, totally underthrew Calvin Johnson that play. It gets tipped, leads to an interception. I think if he puts that ball in a position for Calvin to make that play, lead him down the field a little bit more, then Calvin has an opportunity to possibly make an incredible catch that he's like he's always done. But Matthew sometimes just takes those unnecessary risks to Calvin Johnson that he does not need to. Especially this year when you have so many weapons that you could go to besides Calvin. Golden Tate, we saw him get loose yesterday a little bit with the double coverage that the Panthers were throwing at Calvin Johnson. Golden Tate saw multiple single coverage opportunities that he definitely took advantage of. With all the weapons, you don't need to do that this year. I thought Matthew Stafford definitely needs to be smarter when it comes to that.
Oh, he does. And I remember I said the first week when the Lions played the Giants that teams are going to have all kinds of different coverages with Calvin Johnson. They're going to throw all kinds of new schemes at him this year, and they are. I mean, look at what Carolina did. They threw Kaysen and Melvin both at him multiple times throughout the game. Kaysen literally shut Calvin Johnson down the entire game. Like you said, they did get Eric Ebron for a reason. I mean, it's to give other options for the offense. If they're wasting their first-round pick on Eric Ebron, then you got to utilize the guy if Calvin's going to be double covered.
So do you agree with me now that it was a stupid pick?
Yeah, I mean, we're agreeing on something that it was for a start. That's great, but...
That it was a stupid pick. Yeah. So you agree now that the Lions made a...
Well, no, I'm not going to say it's a stupid pick.
It was a stupid pick,
Alex. It's week two.
A stupid
pick. Don't judge the Lions like you're judging your fantasy team.
It was a... Yeah, I made some stupid decisions, but that was a stupid pick to go with Eric Ebron. Why in the world do you draft a tight end when you got Brandon Pettigrew, who you gave a contract extension to, well, Lord knows why, and you have Joseph Fourier, who had a breakout year last year? It was a stupid pick. The Lions did not address what they needed and went with another weapon for Matthew Stafford to play with on the offense they didn't need it.
The point is it's another weapon. He's just not getting a
weapon they're not even using.
Exactly.
So why would you even pick him up?
Well,
it's ridiculous. Ridiculous, man. And now you got a secondary. Ideally, that's what happened in the secondary. The Lions got beat because of a poor, poor secondary, period. All right, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we hit the second break, definitely have to bring up this. How about this? Several former MSU Spartans saw action in the NFL this past week. I tell you what, from Redskins QB Kirk Cousins, who came in for the injured Robert Griffin III, who just cannot stay healthy. I mean, RG3 is just not. I mean, he's just not durable, man. I can't believe that he went down. But you know, Kirk Cousins comes in and shows that he deserves to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think, you know, a 41-10 victory over the Jaguars. He finished 22 of 33 for 250 yards and 2 TDs. How about that? Shout out to Kirk Cousins. Then how about this? You know, I also have to bring up Redskins reserve safety, Robinson, who relieved starter Bakari Rambo in the second half. Robinson had an interception and led the team in tackles with 6. Cleveland Browns QB Brian Hoyer, he led the game-winning field goal drive to give his team a 26-24 victory over the New Orleans Saints. Hoyer was great. He was 24 for 40 with 198 yards and a TD. Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive end William Golston. Yes, he replaced the injured Adrian Claiborne in the starting lineup against the St. Louis Rams. The Bucs, they had a 19-17 loss. Golston collected 6 tackles and a sack. Good work for him. And starting QB Carson Palmer was out for the Arizona Cardinals, giving Drew Stanton the nod under center against the New York Giants. Stanton finished 14 for 29 with 167 yards. And the Cardinals, they topped the Giants 25-14. Oh, boy, it was a great day in the NFL for Sparty. So many former Spartans, I mean, putting on. And, you know, not to mention, you know, Darquez Denard also played for Cincinnati. Le'Veon Bell, of course, he played Thursday night. Brandon Fields of Miami, he saw some action. There were a lot of Spartans in action for week 2 in the NFL, and a lot of them that turn heads. So congratulations to them. Again, folks, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we chat about here on the show, 517 355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, you know, I guess as far as other notable stories in the NFL for me, I mean, you brought up Greg Hardy for the Carolina Panthers, who, of course, did not play due to his trial of domestic abuse, alleged domestic abuse. There's so many of these instances now taking place, Alex. I mean, it's just really mind-boggling. I feel as though every time I turn on my TV now, I'm hearing about a new story of a new instance where an NFL player is involved with a domestic violence case. I mean, it's really getting alarming. It's getting sad. I don't know if you saw this, but to keep, you know, kind of give it a local feel, EJ Jackson of Lansing Eastern, a great, great player for Lansing Eastern's football team. He is now no longer with the team and is suspended from the school as of right now and has to wear an ankle tether due to a case on Tuesday in which a girl says that he tried to rape her.
Yeah, gosh. It kind of reminds me of when back in the early, I'd say probably early 2000s, when steroids were becoming a thing, where Barry Bonds broke down. Then you saw Sosa even admit. Then you saw Palmeira. You just had a string of different players left and right, months, days after the other, talk about their use of steroids and PEDs. And for the domestic abuse, it's kind of like the initial case with Ray Rice. It kind of gave all the women in hiding, in a way, just more of the comfort, like being comfortable to come out there and just share something that they've been hiding. I mean, obviously, Ray Rice's fiance, she was obviously hiding that for a reason. And I feel that maybe that was what the league needed for all the other cases like that, for people to come out of, I wouldn't say come out of hiding, that's a little too extreme, but just maybe feel more comfortable to be open about the times that they were abused. Do you agree with that? Or
I see where you're going with it. I see where you're going with it. I mean, once, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the Michael Sam kind of thing. I think you're taking the Michael Sam route, where when you see somebody come out, you know, as gay, you know, in the NFL,
right,
a trendsetter, so to speak, he kind of opens the door for everybody, for somebody else who may be going through that same thing and struggling with that, to feel more comfortable about doing so because they've seen somebody do it.
I mean, what else would it be? It's not like TMZ is breaking all this stuff left and right.
Right. But, you know, my whole point with this, though, Alex, I tell you what, it's really sad for me because you're seeing this trend right now happen with football players. So many football players are involved with domestic violence cases and in cases off the field where violence is taking place. This past weekend, we saw Adrian Peterson. He wasn't with the Minnesota Vikings because, you know, he was accused of I guess, whooping his child. Was it his child, I believe? But I guess it's his child, with a switch and causing, you know, I believe an open wound on the child. I mean, we're starting to see now a conversation when it comes to NFL players that we have had on this show before. We've had Robert Viney, former MSU Rose Bowl champ. I mean, Robert is really the first player that I've interviewed to bring up this side of things. And this is the side I'm talking about. Robert brought up a point that he battled a lot of demons after his MSU football career. Those demons being how to deal with life as a football player outside of the gridiron. As a football player, Robert talked about how you are trained, you are put to the test, and the message is reiterated, I guess you could say, for you to be a gladiator, for you to knock somebody's head off, to cause pain, to go out there and play the game of football like you're at war. You are trained in battle, to go out there and battle each and every week, basically. That mentality, after for so long playing the game for years and years and years, it sort of becomes a part of you, ingrained into who you are. And Robert brought up the fact that, you know, when you try to take a gladiator and try to put that gladiator in society where you now have to conduct yourself in a certain manner, for some players it's hard to do so. You know, in instances where, you know, that, you know, they can have an anger issue, or in instances where, you know, they are very short-tempered, that temper can boil over into something that can become very, very bad. And it's an interesting argument because it's no way to test for that. There's not a medical exam you can go through and say, okay, yeah, well, the fact that you're a player in the NFL or a football player shows that you have a heightened sense of aggressiveness. Therefore, your everyday societal life kind of puts everyone at risk around you. I don't think there's a way to test for that, but I see where Robert is coming from, just from the mentality of a football player. You know what I mean? The over-aggressiveness, the high testosterone level. It's an interesting perspective, but I feel as though right now, the NFL, there are so many eyes on the NFL right now and how they handle this that's going to determine the overall perception that people have about the league. And it's interesting because this story just broke. I believe it was this morning that this was reported. I'm looking right here. This afternoon, actually, around noonish, 12:30-ish, the NFL says that three experts in domestic violence were served as senior advisors to the league. Now, Commissioner Roger Goodell sent a memo to teams this morning announcing that Lisa Frile, Janae Randall, and Rita Smith will, quote, help lead and shape the NFL's policies and programs relating to domestic violence and sexual assault. This was the right move, and it is certainly a stepping stone toward trying to find and get to the bottom of why this is happening so much in the NFL. And it's good. I think this is a good move, not only from a PR perspective for the NFL, but from a moral perspective as well. Will it save Roger Goodell's job? What do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're going to hit the first break. When we come back, so much more to talk about, including the Detroit Tigers as they get things rolling. That's right. They have the lead back in the AL Central, folks. We'll talk about the Tigers. We'll talk about Floyd Mayweather and so much more. Do not touch that dial. Current Sports returns in the blink of an eye. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I was joined by Alex Sharg. It is Monday. That's right. Time to get back to work. Time to get back on the grind, as I like to say. And on Mondays here on Current Sports, Alex Sharg likes to call it Martis Mondays. Alex, what is Martis Monday? What is that?
Every Monday, we pick an artist that starts with the letter M, and that today is Maroon 5.
Maroon 5. You a big Maroon 5 guy?
Yeah, they got some hot singles out.
They do. They got some new stuff out?
Yeah, I think there's something that actually just hit the billboards.
Really?
In the top 100. So.
Interesting stuff. Did you see what U2 did?
Did you see that?
No. U2, in honor of their new album and the iPhone 6 coming out, they actually uploaded their entire album to everybody's iPhone and iPad.
Wow.
You probably have it on your iPhone right now.
Probably.
I don't know if you checked.
Did you go when they were here? Did you hear about that?
I did. I was an intern at Channel 6 News my junior year of college with Lisa Byington, and Lisa and I did a story on that. We went out there and covered it. So, yeah, crazy stuff. All right, folks, let's keep this train moving. The Tigers, the Detroit Tigers, they are looking pretty good right now, Alex. They had Tigers right now, if you look at it, they are now 36-27 against the AL Central, including an 11-9 record versus the Cleveland Indians, who they swept this past weekend to now have a game-and-a-half lead over the Kansas City Royals. Well, I'm looking pretty good right now as far as my prediction goes, Alex.
Yeah, you are. And the funny thing is you're probably not going to say one thing about the Tigers and what they need to fix right now.
No, I will. Of course, you know I'm ultra critical, man. You know, when it comes to the Tigers, man, I have a keen eye as to what needs to happen. Even though they do have the lead right now in the AL Central, they're winning the games they're supposed to win right now. They are doing what they need to do to put themselves in position for that playoff hunt and to make some noise in the playoffs. They're getting the job done, so to speak. This is what the Tigers need to do, and they're doing it. Now, if you look at it, hey, especially looking at last night, Ian Kinsler, how great has he been? I mean, a two-run home run for him. J.D. Martinez, he was also great. But if you talk about those closers, we got to bring up those closers. Joe Nathan, he gave up a leadoff single to Michael Brantley, an RBI double to right against Carlos Santana, and a walk with none out in the ninth None out. And I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me.
The winning run was on third with two outs to go in the game, too.
Exactly. Like, you have to be kidding me, man. So, again, it all goes back to the bullpen. You know, how can they sustain and maintain some sort of consistency? I'm not – as far as the bullpen goes, if I had to give them a grade and how confident I am as the season winds down for them, I mean, it has to be like a D. D plus. No, D. D minus. D
even,
minus,
even though Phil Koch's been better this year?
He has been better, especially near the end of – I would say the beginning to the end of last month. You know, Phil Koch came in, and he definitely, you know, was very efficient, very surprisingly efficient. But, you know, when you can't depend on just one man in that bullpen, though. I mean, right. it takes multiple guys, and Joe Nathan being one of those intricate parts. I mean, he wasn't, you know, Joe Nathan. I mean, what can you harp on to give you confidence as a Tigers fan to say that, okay, you know, when that starting pitching comes in, the Tigers have that lead, how confident can you be in that bullpen to come in and close the deal out and to get that win?
Now, that's
you
why,
can't.
Do you ponder putting Soria? I mean, Soria, I mean, what were your thoughts on Soria on Sunday?
Yeah, as far as Soria goes,
he looked better.
He did look better. Soria has.
The curveball to strike him out was pretty darn good.
And Soria has been better as of lately. I think Soria, as the season has gone on, has progressively gotten better game to game to game. I mean, I always go back to that first outing he had with the Tigers, especially the home outing and how disastrous it was. And I was like, oh, this is the Joaquin Soria I've seen in past. It seems as though he's settling in now, but as far as he goes as well, I mean, I have to lump him in that bunch. I just don't know what I'm going to get from them, you know? And I feel as though, you know, we talked about, you know, during that, especially that 9-20 stretch, the Tigers just, their bats were just totally cold, totally dead cold. Yeah. We're starting to see some consistency now from guys that are normally consistent.
And you mentioned Ian Kinsler. Yeah. He was in a huge slump before he hit that two-run homer.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, guys, you know, like J.D. Martinez, who has always showed up, he has been Mr. Consistency for the Tigers. I mean, I think you're starting to see the Tigers get into a relative groove. I'm curious, what were your thoughts on JV, man? Justin Verlander yesterday.
Yeah, right. Well, here's the thing with Justin Verlander is when you're getting 65-70 pitches in four innings, I mean, at the end of four, that was his pitch count. I think it was at 60, right. 65 or 68. The fact that you're having about 20 pitches an inning, that's the JV that you don't want to get to. Now, if you remember last year and 2 years ago when JV was dominant, he'd normally have a big first inning where he'd have 20, 30 pitches. But after that, it'd be smooth sailing from there. I mean, after that, he's getting 8-pitch innings, 10-pitch innings, 12-pitch innings.
Right.
He's cruising through the game. Now, every single inning, you're getting up to 15 to 20 pitches. He has to get back into the groove of having the high strike quality innings, throwing all strikes, working curveball that's accurate, and that high seam fastball where you're getting guys to swing at ground balls and you're getting pop-ups.
I don't think he will,
though,
Alex.
You're not seeing that anymore.
I just don't think he will.
And that's the thing is, for JV to be successful, he needs a low pitch count, and I don't think he's going to get that with his velocity so much further down.
Right. I agree. I totally agree. That's what needs to happen. I just don't think it will. I just don't think it will. There's nothing that I can harp on and say, okay.
But that's why if Anibal comes back, I mean, do you ponder putting JV as that five and in the bullpen?
Yes, without a doubt. I think so. I just think JV right now, this isn't Justin Verlander that we've seen. This isn't the Justin Verlander that we've seen in the past. This isn't the Justin Verlander you can count on to come out and pitch lights out each and every time he hits the mound. That level of consistency has gone down for him. In many ways, I think Justin Verlander's confidence has taken a hit as well, Alex. And I just feel as though, especially when you are such a dominant pitcher, when you are looked at as the best pitcher in the league, you know, ESPN is hitting you up, doing features on you, doing sports science features on you. You're getting praise every single road trip you go to from fans from everywhere in the league. When you reach that mountaintop, it's hard to stay atop there. It is really hard, especially as a pitcher. Because we know pitchers, I mean, that's a lot of wear and tear on your arm. That level of consistency can just go poof out of nowhere. I think right now we've seen decent outings from Justin Verlander this year, but nowhere near where JV has been in the past. And we keep talking about it, saying, okay, well, you know, we think he's going to get out the funk. This will be the outing that he does, so on and so forth. I just haven't seen that this year for me to say, okay, he's going to be okay. You know what I mean? I'm just not confident in Justin Verlander anymore.
Yeah, and the other thing with Verlander, aside from just his the confidence, is that in a matter of time, he's gonna wear down eventually, like he said. But I don't think you anticipated for it to be this gradual at his age. I mean, usually you're not declining in your velocity to at least you're like early to mid 30s. You know, I'm just really sure he's getting up there in age, but I mean, that's what you get for throwing, 98, 100 miles an hour on your pitches, but
yeah.
I mean, he still has considerable age left in the league.
Yeah, definitely. So, definitely. I mean, his upside is certainly up there, but I just don't know if he can reach it, man. That's the thing with me. Folks, we want to take your calls on this. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me at AlMartinWKR and also even go to our new current sports page, just for current sports. Our Twitter page is at @WKAR_sports. So follow us there and give us your thoughts on that realm as well. Okay, well, got to bring up this one. This is something that I definitely wanted to get to last week that certainly rubbed me the wrong way, and definitely have a strong take on it, folks. If you haven't heard, Jayrue Campbell, Detroit Castech football star who served time in jail for assaulting a school security officer, he is back in police custody and this took place just hours. I mean, literally hours, folks, after being released from jail. Now, a source says that Campbell was seen physically assaulting his girlfriend inside of the school near the end of the school day. A teacher and other students intervened, and Jayrue was taken into custody by authorities. Another incident, Alex, of domestic abuse when it comes to a football player. Jayrue Campbell is a kid who definitely has a temper. Without a doubt. I always go back to that video. If you haven't seen that, this is all on YouTube as well. There's a video of Jayrue, after a game. I think they had lost a game. I can't remember if they had won or lost a game. But they're in the handshake line. Jayrue's going through the line and decides to get into it with one of the players, start swinging punches. The assistant coaches have to come and calm him down. And once they get him down on the ground, he is still causing a fit, trying to get out of the arms of the assistant coach. Then, of course, the body slam video. The body slam video where Jayrue, that's how he got in jail the first time, body slamming a Castech security guard in the hallways. He was caught on film doing it and was punished greatly by the judge. And just hours after you go through something like this, I try, being the key word here, Alex, I try to put myself in the shoes of somebody like Jayrue. If I had gone through something like that where, first off, I'm a highly touted football recruit. Many, many schools out there, including the Rose Bowl champion Michigan State Spartans, recruiting me, wanting me to play with this program, and I go out there and do something like body slam a security guard and go to jail for it, right? I go through an ordeal like that where I just basically see my future flash before my eyes. You would think that you would learn your lesson, right? You would think after you leave the jail, after you get punished legally by the legal system here, that would be a tremendous wake-up call to get your stuff together. I'm a firm believer in second chances. I'm a firm believer in that. But if you repeatedly do something that you know is wrong, you need to be punished, and you need a bigger wake-up call than the one you got the first time. I just don't get it sometimes. I just don't get it sometimes with kids who have the world at their hands. Even professional players, not even just Jayrue here. I'm expanding this argument.
Well, Al,
people,
I
just don't get it.
Well, let's look at what happened with former Lion Titus Young. I mean, he had second chance, third chance, the fourth time he had a mental issue.
Right, and that's what I wanted to bring up. When it came to Titus, I mean, he clearly got diagnosed. Titus Young just had something wrong with him that he needed to see a doctor about. Jayrue needs to see a doctor about his temper, I tell you that.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I think it might be more than just that.
It may be something psychological. Something's not working right up there in his head right now. For anybody to go out and again, you're a heck of a football player, and you do something stupid once, then you probably do something even more ridiculous the second time. I don't know who he's going to play football for. I don't know who. If I'll tell you what, if I'm a coach, if I'm a scout, I don't want that kind of kid on my team.
He probably had a chance with like a Western or an MAC, but that's
it's
gone.
It's done. It is gone. Out the window now. I just do not get it. And then the fact that it was a domestic violence case. This kind of hits on domestic violence here. I mean, assaulting his girlfriend inside of the school. I mean, how many times are we going to see this now? You know, Ray Rice and Greg Hardy. I just don't get it, man. It's really, really puzzling.
It was hours. It's like he was targeting the moment he got out to find her. Hours after, he's not going home. He's not taking a rest. I mean, being in juvenile, I would imagine, I wouldn't know how, but being in juvenile detention or prison is pretty hard, and the environment's pretty
severe. It's a wake-up call.
Pretty severe.
You've seen those Maury shows, right? Have you seen those Maury shows where they bring in like the kids who are just, you know, doing crazy things, and they bring in the boot camp guy, and they go through boot camp or whatever? I mean, you would think. I mean, I don't know if I would equate it to that. I don't know. I'm never, like I said, we've both never been behind bars, thank goodness. But I guess you can equate it to that in some regard. Just a wake up call for your life.
I've seen what it looks like behind bars. I've gotten a tour of jails before, and that's not a livable place. I mean, the dirt in it's horrible.
It's just ugh. Yeah. I mean, but you think going into a situation like that would be a wake up call, J.Ru? Now, I mean, hey. I wish him all the luck in the world, but hey, the hammer needs to be put down on him, and he needs to learn his lesson. If I'm a football recruit, I'm done. I'm done recruiting this kid. I don't care how good he was. He was an outstanding football player for Cash Tech, one of the top quarterbacks in the state, nationally ranked. All that goes out the window when you cannot conduct yourself in a certain way off the field. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by giving you our weekend winners. We'll also talk about Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Michigan. Yes, Michigan get back on track when it comes to their postseason hopes. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports on this Monday. I want to remind you all that, hey, you do not want to miss one Current Sports radio show throughout this entire week. We have a plethora of guests who will be joining me on the air, including Courtney Clem of the MSU women's soccer team. She'll be with me. Rachel Shulist, who's an outstanding cross-country runner. Ronald Mann. I don't know if you guys saw this story, but we highlighted Ronald Mann actually on Current Sports TV. Ronald Mann is one of mixed martial arts' finest here in Mid-Michigan, who lost his leg in a motorcycle accident. He goes in the ring, and he goes in the ring and fights able-bodied opponents. It's unbelievable. If you have not seen it, folks, I mean, it is certainly something to see. His record is pretty, pretty good. But Ronald will be talking about his story this week on Current Sports. You do not want to miss that. And, yes, we have two high school football coaches to bring to you throughout the week. So you don't want to miss all of that and so much more. And we will be throughout this entire semester on Current Sports. We'll be bringing some great students who are working with Current Sports, sort of like we did last year. And they will be going out and covering some high school sports and talking to some coaches that are from around the area. And you don't want to miss that. They'll be bringing a lot of feature stories to the table as well. So exciting things happening on in the Current Sports world. So you don't want to miss any of that throughout this week and any week here on WKAR AM 870. All right, Alex. Well, 10 minutes left in the show, my man. Let's go straight to our weekend winners. For me, I'm going to start off, and I'm going to give the weekend winner, Al Martin's weekend winner, to Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Floyd, you handle your business, my man. He constantly proves me wrong.
Yeah, you were doubting him.
I was doubting him. I doubted him in the first fight with Maidana. I said that Maidana would win. And we did our predictions. I said that Maidana would win this fight as well. I was more so speaking with my heart and not my head. I admit that. But Floyd Mayweather handled his business. $888,000 per minute. I mean, I would love to be that man, right? I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. But, you know, Floyd does it in such a way that's really not exciting. Let's be honest here. A Floyd Mayweather Jr. fight is not exciting at all. People tune in because they want to say that, you know, if Floyd does go down, they want to say that they saw it live.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's why
I watch.
That's the thing is, I was about to watch the fight on Saturday. Went over to Buffalo Wild Wings.
They showed it there?
I was going to pay for it.
Okay.
So you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, they're charging $10 cover.
Oh my
at
goodness.
The door just to get in there. And that's
really?
Not even counting the food you want to get when you're there, of course.
Yeah.
So I'm going there and I just think, oh my goodness, no way am I paying to watch another
was
Floyd
it packed?
Mayweather. It was so. I went early. I was there at like 9.
Right, right.
They had the couple bouts beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not, I didn't even watch the fight, Al, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be a typical fight. Even if Floyd Mayweather did lose,
mm-hmm.
he's not getting knocked out and losing. He'll lose off of percentage hits.
Well, no, I think that if Floyd is going to lose, it has to be a knockout. I kind of take the other end.
How would he lose of a knockout
because,
if he's a defensive fighter?
What's the thing? I mean, we've seen great boxers just get caught. Boxing is a crazy sport because sometimes you can just get caught. You know, you can just get caught, you know, head at the wrong place at the wrong time. Boom, knockout. We've seen that happen with some of the greats, you know. Boxers I think are even greater than Floyd. But, you know, if it goes to decision, though, Floyd is a master at the 12-round win. We know that because he perfectly crafts 12 rounds where he doesn't get hit a lot. You know, he picks and chooses where he hits. His percentage points are through the roof. They go to the card, and it's not even close. If you're going to be Floyd, you got to be aggressive from the get-go, which I think Marcos Maidana had. He had that formula in fight number one. He went away from it in fight number two. He was not as aggressive as he was in the first fight. Didn't even really hurt Floyd, besides, I guess, biting him, quote-unquote, on his right glove, which I don't even think that happened. But
yeah.
If it goes 12, Mayweather wins, and he just constantly shows that, hey, you know, he's the best in the game right now.
I see where you're coming from, that you need to be aggressive, but that's also the reason why he lost the first fight.
Right,
because
he wasn't
too
conditioned.
Aggressive.
He was not conditioned for 12 rounds, though. And Marcos admitted it. He was not conditioned to go a full 12 rounds at the same speed that he had those first 5 rounds.
Right.
He significantly slowed down. He got tired.
He missed
and
all
that
his
was
hits
it.
in the last 3 rounds.
Exactly. But he was able to hurt Floyd in that first fight. That first fight, he was able to hurt Floyd. The first time we had ever really seen Floyd get cut. And you know, people were saying, okay, that's the reason why he got the rematch, because those first 5 rounds, ideally. But, you know, he came out with a different mentality, and it came to bite him in the rear end this time. So,
all
right. Floyd Mayweather, though. I got to shout out Floyd.
I'm going to go with weekend winners, and it has to be Michigan State alumni in the NFL.
I mean,
for Will Golson to come in for an injured player to get 6 tackles and a sack, I mean, those are pretty good numbers. Now, some guys don't even get 1 sack in an NFL game that are starting.
Right.
So, for me, that's a huge impact player, was Will coming in for the injured player. Over the weekend.
Yeah, it was so alarming because there were so many Spartans to play.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, with the whole Johnny Football, Brian Hoyer controversy, for him to lead that drive.
Right.
And if Brian Hoyer didn't lead that drive, I guarantee you'd see Johnny Football starting.
I think so, right? Too. I feel the same way. But yeah, I mean, looking at other Spartans, like, you know, Keyshawn Martin, you know, he had a kick return for 0 yards. But still, you know, Keyshawn Martin was playing. How about that? D'Amato Pico of Cincinnati, the veteran defensive lineman, had 5 tackles in a 24-10 victory over the Falcons. I talked about Trent Robinson, who played for Washington. Deion Sims, second-year tight end. He was targeted twice. Didn't have a catch, but he played. You know, there were a lot of Spartans on TV.
And that's great. But the point of it is that traditionally Michigan State quarterbacks aren't what's remembered,
right,
when
exactly.
you're drafting a player out of from the Spartans, if
exactly.
you're an NFL team.
Yeah.
If you're an NFL team, you look at all the Spartan greats in the NFL. They're a lot great linemen. They have some great defensive some defensive players, some linebackers. You're not looking at great quarterbacks to be remembered. Michigan, with Brian Greasy and Brady and Gerback, those are the guys that are going to be remembered when it comes to quarterbacks. But Michigan State now, to have 3 QBs lead their teams to victories, especially one where you're considering losing your job to Johnny Football.
Says a lot,
that
right?
That says a lot.
It says a lot. And again, I totally agree with you 110%, which is so rare on this show, Alex. But yes. You know, looking at those 3 quarterbacks, they are certainly showing that Michigan State cranks out quality QBs. Quality QBs. You know, I think there are going to be a lot of people now. It bodes well for Mr. Cook. I tell you that right now.
And how about Drew Stanton? I mean, the career he's been through, going from team to team, he can't get a start. Finally gets his chance when he goes down, and you know, he lived it up. He lived up to the expectation of it.
I tell you what,
with
man,
Kirk Cousins too.
I think I was just about to bring up that Kirk Cousins. Now, I think you got a QB, you got a quarterback controversy there. I think Kirk Cousins is showing that he is definitely a starting quarterback in the NFL, without a doubt. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now it's just about him getting that shot for whatever team it may be. It won't be. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. It will not be for Washington at all. It won't be for Redskins because they have their guy. Robert Griffin III, even though from a technical standpoint, I think that Kirk Cousins is a overall better quarterback, Robert Griffin III sells tickets. He sells jerseys. He is the franchise. They're not. They see dollar signs when they look at RG3. No matter how durable or non-durable, I should say, he is perceived to be right now, especially with this injury. Looks as though he's going to be out 4 to 5 weeks. No matter how durable Robert Griffin or non-durable he may look, he is still the franchise, and they're paying him a lot of money right now.
But
Kirk is going to get an opportunity somewhere else after this season.
You're telling me that if Kirk has an unbelievable season with the Redskins, they won't sell jerseys?
Of course they will. But I'm telling you, Robert Griffin, though, he's the marketable guy. He's on commercials. He's everywhere.
Sure, but if Kirk has a great season, if he comes out, he wins, ten games?
I understand.
He'll sell jerseys with Redskin jerseys.
But it's RG3. RG3 is a phenomenon right now, Alex. It's going to take more than four games for Kirk Cousins to become high on that totem pole for Washington Redskins personnel, coaching personnel. Right. Maybe for fans, but for coaching personnel, they see dollar signs. The GM sees dollar signs right now, guaranteed dollar signs right now, in a pretty hefty contract that they are currently paying RG3. They're not going to bail on him anytime soon. Kirk Cousins is going to have to get an opportunity somewhere else, which he will get after this year, I think.
Yeah.
He's going to show a lot of people that he deserves to be in this league.
He definitely will.
And he is. He's certainly doing that right now. All right, Alex. Well, you wanted to talk about Michigan really quick. I guess we got 3 minutes to do so.
Yeah.
What'd you like from him?
Well, the funny thing is I was going to go on the show and talk about how lucky Michigan football got against Miami, Ohio. Did you catch any highlights from the game?
I did.
Did you watch the whole game?
Yeah, I didn't watch. I watched highlights. I didn't catch the entire game.
If you watched the entire game, the offense was horrible. The 31 points they got were lucky fingertip catches. They were overthrown by Garner. Jake Butt, their tight end, he barely got to the ball.
Right.
It was at the end of the game. They still couldn't score after that. That was in the third. They were up 31-10 in the third. It's not like Michigan blew them out of the water and looked loads better. They still looked bad.
The score can be deceiving.
Very deceiving.
Yeah.
In Miami, Ohio, they have the longest losing streak of NCAA football teams. You're playing one of the worst teams, and at one point it was 17-10 for 2.5 quarters.
I did see that on my. I got an alert about that. I'm sitting like, really? It's pretty close. Early, it was very, very close early. But I just don't think, man, that Devin Gardner is that good.
Devin
Gardner is overrated. Especially there are a lot of Michigan fans out there that feel as though Devin Gardner is unbelievable. But he's just an average quarterback to me. He's not accurate. You know, he can run a little bit. Yeah, he can run a little bit.
You're comparing him to, like, those bigger 6'4", like those Robert Griffins that were those dual-threat dominant athletes
at the
quarterback position.
He just seems to me, I mean, he doesn't read the football. His football instincts are lacking to me. I just don't feel as though, you know, he's an elite quarterback. I just don't feel that way, man. I just think he's an average QB. So, we'll definitely dive into Michigan tomorrow. Folks, if you still have any thoughts on it, even though we're about to close out the show, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet me at AlMartinWKR. And even follow us on our new Current Sports page at WKR_sports. Don't want to miss any of that. All right, folks. Well, we'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Thank you all who tune in to this edition of Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, WKR East Lansing, and 90.5 WKAR FM. HD3's Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic start to your week. And be easy, people.